Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I am one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood. With me tonight is my co-host, as always,
Chad Metz.
Welcome to another weird, wild, and wacky week in the world of genre movie news. So, Chad, Transformers, The Last Night. We did an entire podcast on it. Thanked Michael Bay for his time, his energy, and his efforts.
Did we?
Yes, and now we are at a point where we have box office results. Mm-hmm. The cup that you are holding bears the symbol of the Transformers.
I didn't even notice this. Thank you for that.
Yeah, so you have helped put money into their pockets. So, your thoughts, sir, on the record box office lows for the Transformers franchise?
Well, it's record domestic box office lows, which...
It broke records in China, but it is underpacing Age of Extinction in all of their foreign markets.
See, that's what I didn't know, and that's what I was more curious about. Because the trend has been for them to drop here, but it's a really steep drop from Age of Extinction to this.
Yeah, it's like 35 plus million difference between the two.
Yeah, that's if this already wasn't a six movie franchise, that's we're gonna pump the brakes on you for like 5 years. But so hearing that it did well in China is, I can't say disheartening because I expected it. But I am encouraged that the rest of the world is kind of catching on to us and like, okay, we like seeing the robots fight. We don't like any of the rest of this stuff. And we kind of don't like everything about the robots that fight. So can you please stop making these movies? So that's what I get from all of this. It's really, I mean, it's going to depend on what the final worldwide haul is. It seems like China's going to keep it afloat. But we might finally be at a point where Paramount's like, well, Michael Bay, you didn't make us $1 billion. Maybe you shouldn't come back this time.
We're looking at a total that'll probably finish just over $100 million domestically.
Whew. Whew. Yeah, that's bad. That's terrible.
Wonder Woman did $100 million in one weekend.
Yeah. And that movie's back at number two, which kudos to Wonder Woman. But yeah. Well,
this disappoints Disney because Cars 3.
They should have expected it. I mean,
it is the best of the Cars movies, apparently, but it's...
I'm going to say I'll never know, but I will see it eventually. But when I saw the numbers, I only saw the top two before I came over. And I knew it was Transformers and Wonder Woman. I completely forgot Cars existed. So, yeah, that goes to tell you how much other people think about Cars.
So, I mean, is Bay somewhere looking at a TV like, panicked and worrying and nervous, or is he just plotting his next move?
I don't know, because he can go one of two ways. He can be like, I'm really done, and these box office numbers tells me that I should step away. Or he could be like, I can't go out on this note, and like is plotting his recourse to come back. I'm hoping it's more the former than the latter. I don't know with him, because Michael Bay is known for saying one thing until the last minute and then changing his mind.
Or we could do the Brent Ratner thing and just like kill the critics and Rotten Tomatoes and say that they're a plague upon society and it's their fault that my movie is not doing so well.
He shouldn't do that, because again, Rotten Tomatoes is just an aggregator of reviews. It's just one place for you to go look at all the reviews. You can look at the percentage and that'll tell you the percentage of critics that like or dislike. That's it. If you look at the numbers underneath that, it'll tell you where the movie is on like a 1 to 10 scale. So you can't be mad at that. Critics have always judged movies. This has always happened. Rotten Tomatoes just happens to be a site that puts it all where you can find it in one spot. So don't get mad at the Rotten Tomatoes. Don't get mad at the critics. Just make a better movie.
And we will see, because Knight will make a better movie. Travis Knight will make a better new movie.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see the fallout after that. Because I have to think that that movie's going to be better than at least the last four Transformers movies. So what happens after that is going to be the curious thing with this franchise.
This is very true. It's going to be interesting to see as the legs go on and as the rest of the summer develops, because it's pacing well, well behind Age of Extinction.
The way I see it,
$15 million opening night. $15 million opening day. That includes the previews from Tuesday night.
Yeah, that's terrible, man. But they better make all their money this coming weekend, because after that, it's a wrap. It's done. Spider-Man comes up that week following.
A couple weeks after that, you got Apes, and a couple weeks after that, you've got Dunkirk.
Yeah, and it's, I think it's those three in succession. So July 17th, 14th, and then 21st. Those are your three movies. So Transformers, this upcoming weekend, is it.
All right. I mean, I just think it's interesting and nervous times over at Paramount. I mean, you commissioned a writer's room, put together ideas, you've got this Bumblebee movie already firmed up and set. And, you know, I find it kind of hard to believe that this would be a situation where they would be blindsided by the response in the box office. But it might also have been just a situation where they were expecting it to be bad. They just didn't know how bad domestically.
I think at this point, they can't be surprised by the reviews, because they've been getting these reviews for the last four movies. And they've seen the profit margin, well, the box office margin in the U.S. tank going down. So they had to be prepared for that. I think if there is a shock for their system, it's how it's doing overseas outside of China. I think that they're counting on international market to keep it afloat and make it a big movie, and it might not happen this time. And I think that would be the shock to their system.
Yeah. I mean, but again, if you're setting records in China, just release it direct to DVD in China.
I don't know how DVD sales are in China. But, yeah, that's a little bit too much money to go direct to DVD.
Yeah. All right. So, let's move on. We talked about Wonder Woman, touched on it briefly there. Crossed the $300 million mark domestically. Crossed the $600 million mark worldwide. Became the highest grossing movie ever with a female director. Mm-hmm. Has been very well received. Is now the highest grossing movie in the DCEU. Is surpassed Dawn of Justice domestically. And has a chance to actually do it internationally if it gets, you know, continues to have the kind of legs it's been having. So, your thoughts on just, you know, where we stand with Wonder Woman getting the kind of praise and adoration we thought it was going to get a week before it came out?
So I'm not surprised by the reception. It's actually what I hoped for. I thought that
proof that if you give people a good movie, they will show up.
Yes, but I thought that there's so much damage to the DC brand that these numbers might not be possible. So to see them, I'm not surprised by them, because I figured the movie would be good. Once I saw it, I knew it would be good. It was just a matter of convincing people to go see it. So it's good to see that people recognize how good this movie is. And it's all of the accolades, like highest grossing movie with a female director, all those kind of things the movie deserves, because it's, you know, it's a big blockbuster movie, and it's one of the few that has a female director. So that's always good. But to see the staying power it has in the box office, because it's in week, what, 3-4? And it was, yeah, so number one, number two. So 4 weeks in, and it's still the number two movie domestically, and we've had 3 or 4 wide releases since it's come out, and it still doesn't go any further than two. So I think that people are seeing it, and they're seeing it again, which this movie deserves it, and it's a step in the right direction for DC, and now they just have to not F it up.
Well, there is that deep and wide speculation about Justice League, so...
Yeah,
But, I mean, this buys you some time, and some goodwill, and some capital. Johns is already talking up a Wonder Woman 2, which, you know, with the aftermath of the whole, will Patty Jenkins return? She's already signed on. Wait, no, she's not already signed on. That whole deal. They said that it won't be a period piece, and she said she knows exactly what she wants to do with the sequel. So, I mean, that's
all good.
That's all good news. That's all solid good news.
Yeah, you can't, I still don't think she's signed on for 2 yet, but according to John's, Patty and John's are working on the script right now, so it's probably just a bit of a formality.
Yeah, everybody kind of forgets about that story by Zack Snyder credit that's on there.
I always remember it because I know people look at see Zack Snyder's name and like, they frown and growl at it and stuff. But I keep saying, Zack is good at like the broad strokes, and story by can be very broad strokes. It's that the minutia that gets Zack. So he could have very well came up with the framework and then had people work on it, but he still gets story by credit. But yeah, I think we won't be seeing his name anywhere near Wonder Woman 2. So
we won't be seeing his name anywhere near any DC properties after Justice League.
Yeah.
But it's going to be interesting because, like I said, they have only the one movie that's Aquaman, and it's currently filming for 2018. So.
I don't know. There's so many reports coming out of DC right now.
And then, you know, there's still the Wonder Woman, the Suicide Squad 2 that's just this bubbling around. The Man of Steel 2 that's mumbling around. The Batman, which is confirmed, but we don't know when Reeves is going to start pre-production on that. If Ben Affleck's going to be back for that. Still, it's a lot of unanswered questions, but this gives you a boost of positive confidence.
It's the ultimate boost because this is all people are talking about. They've forgotten about everything else.
In a summer, which, you know, you're basically the second highest grossing movie behind Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it seems like it'll stay in the top 5, probably top 3 for summer box office. I don't think it's going to stay at 2. Because the movie that's coming out next week is probably going to knock it down.
Is there a movie coming out next week, Chad?
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. And I'm ready to see it, so I can stop avoiding spoilers.
Have you seen that there were some early reactions to Spider-Man Homecoming?
Of course I saw it, because I can't not open a link that says Spider-Man Homecoming. All of them. Any link that says Spider-Man Homecoming, I just click on it. But this one is fine, because they don't give me spoilers. But it gave me lots and lots of hope.
Lots and lots of hope about lots and lots of things.
As of today, I think there were 2 screenings that the press got to see. But the reactions that we got on Friday was all from the first one. I think they did in New York or something. But there were a number of critics that got to see it, and they got to tweet their reactions. The trend is for you to be able to tweet reactions, but not have a full review until the embargo list, which is normally like the week of the movie. So there were a number of critics, and they all sang the praises of Spider-Man Homecoming. The worst reaction that I saw was that this person liked the movie, didn't love it. They thought it was fun, but they thought it was fluffy, and that essentially you skipped the origin, so you took away the tragedy of Spider-Man and just had all the fun.
I'm okay with that. And I'm completely okay. I've seen Uncle Ben die 5 times. Yeah. I don't need to see Uncle Ben die another time.
And that's exactly where I'm at with this. It's like, Spider-Man inherently has tragedy. If we skip that one that we've already seen, he's got some more coming. He's got lots of it coming. But if this is just, hey, I'm high school fun having Spider-Man, I'm all for it.
Lots of praise for Holland. Lots of praise for his performance and clearly loving the role of Spider-Man.
Yeah. I said it before this movie, but these reactions are reinforcing my belief that once I see this movie and walk out, I don't know who was Spider-Man before him. He will just be Spider-Man. Andrew Garfield might be a twinkle in my eye, but I will not remember that first dude that put on the Spider-Man suit. Tom Holland will be the guy.
I mean, it's going to be... It's got to feel good for that, for Pascal and them, right? Right now, to get this kind of positive reaction from critics.
Especially for her, since she was kind of forced out of Sony. But the last thing she did before leaving was make sure this got set up. So this is kind of like vindication and validation for her on her way out.
Even if she does make crazy statements that she later has to come back and clarify.
Yeah. I don't know. So... There's so much, again, since there's so many moving parts, maybe what she was saying about, you know, that whole shared universe thing was true at a point. And Sony was like, no, maybe not. And Marvel's like, if y'all ain't doing this, then we're not having it. So pocket universe it up, but we can't claim you yet. And who knows? After the movie comes out, this might all change again.
Well, I know that there's 900 Spider-Man characters they own the rights to. That was part of the reason why we were talking in 2012 about an Aunt May movie. with Sally Field at, you know, 60 or 70 something. It's why we were talking at one point about a Sinister Six movie directed by Drew Goddard. It's why we were, you know, teasing that in Amazing Spider-Man 2. You know, it's why we were talking about a Venom standalone movie all the way back then. Like, their idea was, we have all these characters, mainly villains, because there are way more villains in the Spider-Man universe than there are Spider-Men.
Yeah.
So, you know, so from their standpoint, it is, whereas Marvel has a whole bunch of heroes and villains to play with. Fox has a whole bunch of heroes and villains to play with. Sony really only has one hero and a whole bunch of villains.
Yeah. So, yeah, with the 900 characters, which I believe is an accurate number. The character's been around for, like 60 years at this point. However, like, as you're saying, you can probably list off all of the heroes in that on, like, one hand. You have Peter Parker Spider-Man, Miles Morales Spider-Man, you have Spider-Man 2099, the various clone Spider-Man, and, like a Black Cat hero there. And, like Black Cat and Sandman come to mind. They can be heroes, but they're predominantly portrayed as villains.
Anti-heroes, possibly.
Possibly, but, I mean, mostly what you have are villains and the ex-girlfriends of Peter Parker. That kind of makes up all of your characters. So, all of that's fine if they're in a Spider-Man movie, but outside of, like, Venom, there's not really a lot that lends itself to having a whole movie. And even with Venom, like with a character like Venom, the whole setup is based on the premise of Spider-Man being there. So, you can make these movies, you just have to set them up first. And Sony's like, nah, nope. We're going to go straight from New Age Spider-Man to making all these other movies, and you can just fill in the gaps. And I think that's where the problem is going to come in, is that they're going to leave threads to there being a Spider-Man involved, but how we fill in those gaps and how they proceed with it is probably going to cause the problems and make these movies suck.
So, I mean, Pascal made the comments about being in the same world, which freaked the internet out and caused the, you know, a Twitter to ignite on fire, and Kevin Feige looked at her like she was crazy. And she came back and she retracted that. And Feige had said on record, you know, it's a Sony project. And we got news this week about in a Hollywood Reporter story about the Sony Marvel deal, that they're looking to do spinoff movies not only for Black Cat and Silver Sable, which has a director, and the Venom movie, which has Tom Hardy attached to star and a director, and a release date.
Mm-hmm.
We're also talking about Kraven Manhunter and Mysterio. So, getting their own movies. So, let's start off with the Venom news. Because, to me, Venom is the thing that feels the most real here. We know Avi's a fondness for the character, and we know that there is a certain generation of 90s kids who fawn all over the character. In a Deadpool type of way. But the problem that I see is you know, the news this week about Carnage being in the Venom movie as the villain, really? Essentially, and painting Venom himself as an anti-hero. The problem that I have with all of this kind of stuff is that you're taking things out of Marvel's toolbox. There are things like Mysterio that would make perfect sense for a Homecoming 2. If you want to start, you know, on a tiered level of villain, Mysterio would be a nice step up from Vulture. Or Kraven Manhunter would be, you know, another step up the ladder from Vulture. You take those off the table and Marvel can't use them, then Marvel's got to keep digging into the bowels of Spidey's Rogues Gallery to try and find somebody that either A, hasn't been done before on screen, or B, is well known enough to garner attention and attraction.
Not even just well known. There are a lot of those characters that are involved with Spider-Man are just stupid.
Hence the reason why IGN played the game of is it a professional wrestler or is it a Spidey?
I missed that one. I need to go back and see that. But yeah, Spider-Man has a lot of stupid villains. He's got a lot of great ones, and there's a lot of great ones outside of the like really well-known ones. But to just be starting up, when part of the reason that people of a certain age got really excited for seeing Tom Holland as Spider-Man in Civil War and knowing that there was a Spider-Man movie coming was, so maybe they'll get Venom right. And part of the whole thing of getting Venom right is that it has to be... Venom takes a while to do because Peter has to get the suit, Peter has to wear the suit, Peter has to lose the suit. Peter, in the process of all that, Peter's got to piss off Eddie Brock, and then those two have to come together. So if you do it right, it should be like two movies at the very least.
And we've got a Spider-Man who's going to space, assuming at some point.
Yeah, you have the perfect setup for him to get the suit. He seems to be going to space. He can come back. He can wear the suit for a movie, and then he can lose the suit, and then he can fight Venom. And again, you have it in two movies. But because Sony seems just to want to get to Venom, they're willing to circumvent all of that. And if I had to guess, maybe Venom takes place way after these movies.
I would say that my guess, honestly, is that what they're going to try and do, and it will sound incredibly stupid, but what they're probably going to try and do is do a CG Spider-Man with Holland voicing.
I mean,
which will have the influence of having Peter Parker and Spider-Man in the movie, which ties it directly in. The problem is Brock and Parker's relationship stems from the Daily Bugle, and we are a long way away from the Daily Bugle in that version, because they're not going to do what Raimi did, which is a huge time jump from, you know, one act in high school, one act in college, and then, you know, never going back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's at the Daily Bugle in like the second act of part of the first movie.
Yep.
So, you know, we're nowhere near that point in Parker's story yet. He still has a whole lot. He hasn't even met Gwen Stacy yet, as far as we know. Hasn't met Mary Jane, as far as we know. Like, we're at the very beginning stages of Peter Parker discovering his powers, figuring out how to use them, and figuring out what it means to be a hero. That's a long way from where you've got to be to get to emo Spider-Man and his fight with Eddie Brock.
Yeah. So, the CG Spider-Man doesn't bother me as much, mostly because Civil War, that Spider-Man, all CG. Completely CG, so it's not terrible.
But my point is, like, it's not about the CGI. They can pay the money, they can get the CGI right. Problem is, you put a CGI Spider-Man in a movie that is not connected to the MCU and has absolutely nothing to do with the MCU, and then he shows up in a Marvel movie again, and they're like, wait, what? How?
Yes, and that's why they should stay away from this. Because, as you're alluding to, the Spider-Man's not ready to meet Venom. If you want to do Venom and still want to have him tied to Spider-Man, it would seem that Venom would take place way later when Spider-Man has gotten older to have this interaction with Venom. And once you do this big jump like that, but still want to have movies that deal with times progressing up to that, there's a lot of room to mess stuff up. And it's just easier to not do Venom. However,
it's also easier not to do Spider-Man in a Venom movie, yeah. But that's kind of a prerequisite.
Yeah.
Unless you're just going to do the symbiote coming down and attaching himself to Brock first, not attaching himself to anybody else.
But the minute you do that, that's the minute you remove Venom from having any interactions with Spider-Man in the way that fans of Spider-Man and Venom know the characters to have, which is a huge detriment. Not really to Spider-Man, but to Venom.
But, Chad, the depth of nerdiness of this conversation that the two of us have just had shows that the mental gymnastics that they're going to have to do to figure out how to make this work is not... Is it really going to be worth trading in on the name value of Venom to make all of this work?
I don't think it is. I mean...
And I'm sure in Avi's mind it is.
Avi, I think... So Ivy's been in love with Venom since he's been involved with Spider-Man. And Ivy's been involved with Spider-Man since the Fox TV show. And Ivy has a background in toys. And one of the cooler toys to have was Venom. So I can see why. I know why Ivy's
roots. Makes me money.
Yeah. Toys. Venom sold toys. Everybody wanted the Venom toy. Makes him money. So he's really attached to it. But you got to think of the long game. Like, you can go for the short gratification of putting the movie out. It'll make a few bucks. People might like it. But the long game is to plan out Venom to intertwine with Spider-Man. And then you can have this really, what people really want to see, which is a Venom Spider-Man movie. And you can do that a number of ways, because Venom is really, I mean, Venom, physically, he is a monster. And the way he attacks Spider-Man starting off is, you can almost go like a horror route with that, because he's really creepy. He can creep up on him, and he's got that toothy grin and that big tongue and all that stuff. You can do that movie, and then you can go ahead and do whatever Venom movie you want, because you've given fans what they wanted. Now you can give them R-rated Venom that kills people, and everybody's happy. And you will make more money that way, than what you're planning on doing now.
You know what the problem with that is, Chad?
It's not right now.
No, the problem with that, Chad, is that falls under Mr. Feige's purview. With Mr. Feige getting the credit, and Mr. Feige getting the praise, and Mr. Feige getting the honor and getting the money. That does not lend itself to Mr. Arad. Mr. Arad getting any of the credit.
And when you say things like that, it just makes me wish that Disney would be like, you know what? Sony Pictures, we're buying you. You're hemorrhaging money anyway. We're just going to buy your movie arm and be done with this crap. Ivy Arad, see ya. And Feige, you've now got Spider-Man back in house. You don't ever have to worry about him leaving again. And you got all the toys that comes with him. Knock yourself out, kid. That's what I want Disney to do. Because when I hear stuff like that, I know there are people in Sony that are like, they have no idea, they just want to make money. They're trusting Ivy because he's been around with all this other stuff. They're giving Ivy something because you took away Spider-Man from him. But at some point, somebody's going to be like, no. But I don't think any of them are aware enough to tell him no.
Well, we'll see. I mean, the critical reception for Homecoming so far is off the charts. We know that they are not going to have Iron Man back in the second Spider-Man Homecoming movie.
But somebody else will be there.
Well, I don't know. No. No spoilers. None.
No. They haven't said. They just said.
Yeah, no spoilers. I was disappointed in the fact that I was tweeted at, because I would have loved to have found out such information in the theater, because I would have lost my mind.
I couldn't help it. I saw that, I immediately thought of you. I won't say the spoilers, but I wasn't talking about this person. I'm talking about for Homecoming 2. Iron Man won't be in it, but somebody else from the MCU will.
Which is basically a contractual obligation, so that the brand naming of the MCU follows it on, so that they can continue to make money.
Yeah, but they haven't said who it is.
And you won't know until you, by that time, you're through at least the first Infinity War movie.
Probably, yeah.
So, I mean, you can start piecing the pieces together by then.
Yeah, I'm just hoping whoever it is more like Falcon appearing in Ant-Man than like Iron Man in this one. And even though, from what I've heard, Iron Man is only in it for like 15 minutes.
Which is necessary, just to have that Downey in there to...
You know,
it's the natural progression from where we were at the end of Civil War, so it naturally works. It helps Sony out, because every movie Downey's been in for Marvel has been a success. Gives them that brand name recognition, clearly ties it into the MCU, and you can lessen that next time, because by then he will have been in 4 movies.
Oh, and, yeah, right, yeah.
And people will understand and know who Tom Holland's Spider-Man is.
This is right, yep.
So, and he'll have a leg to stand on his own. Won't really need the Avenger to tie in.
Yeah.
So, Chad, speaking of Marvel properties that are not related to Marvel proper, Marvel Studios and Disney, we have Fantastic Four news.
Oh, I forgot about that. I'm going to forget about it. Oh, God.
We have Fantastic Four news, Chad.
So,
unconfirmed.
But before we start, so this Fantastic Four news, is it that Fantastic Four is going to Marvel?
No.
So this Fantastic Four news still has to deal with Fox.
Yes.
So I don't want to hear said Fantastic Four news. And I don't think anybody else would want to hear it either.
So the Fantastic Four news of the week is that they are going to move forward with a kid-friendly, family-friendly version again. And this time, instead of focusing on the first family, they're going to focus on the first family's kids.
Yep.
So they're going to skip right over the first generation and do the second generation of Fantastic Four people.
So it's the second generation of Reed and Sue, because it would be Franklin and
their kids' comic book origin history is super convoluted and super crazy.
Well, Franklin is not so much. It was just like, you know, they had a kid. Once he came out, then they tagged all this other weird stuff on him. But what all you need to know is Reed and Sue had a kid. It was a boy. They named him Franklin. He eventually turned out to be a mutant. And I won't tell you anything else, because that's when you go down the convoluted rabbit hole, because Franklin has a whole bunch of stuff tied to him.
The girl was a reborn miscarriage.
You're telling me something I didn't know.
Yes. It's a very deep, complex, very crazy comic book thing.
Yeah, because I was reading Fantastic Four, and, you know, Franklin was there, and I stopped reading it for a while, and then I came back, and there's this girl. I'm like, oh, he has a sister now. Okay. And apparently they're both mutants, and she's really, really powerful, but I don't remember what she's doing. But the fact that you're telling me that, so one, it doesn't surprise me, but two, it's something that doesn't ever need to be put onto a movie screen in that way. But, I mean, most of the time when comic book characters have kids, a lot of people don't like it because it changes the dynamics. However, Fantastic Four is basically about a family, so adding the kids doesn't really... It keeps up with that family dynamic. Now, the way that they keep saying they want to do this movie is for the focus to be on these two kids, Ant Thing and Human Torch, which could be fine. However, we have not had a successful Fantastic Four movie that's focused on Reed, Sue, Human Torch, and the Thing. So you're just gonna scrub all that part out and just go straight to the kids, and
their two uncles.
Their two uncles, and that's fine. Like, you could have made the movie and had an adventure with the two uncles and the kids if you had done everything else right before. But you keep swinging and missing, and by my count, you swung and missed 3 times, and in baseball, that means you're out and you don't get to go up again. So, all that to say that, mentioning this idea, they overtly said that they want to go for like an Incredibles tone, which the irony isn't lost, because Incredibles is the best Fantastic Four movie we've ever had, and it's not Fantastic Four. So, that's a good thing to strive for. However, I don't believe anything you say, Fox. I don't believe you can do anything you say when it comes to these characters. And if you proceeded in doing this, I don't think it'll... Even if it's good, I don't think it'll work, because fans are going to burn it down, because they're going to be like, we could have had Fantastic Four in the Marvel Universe, and y'all keep screwing around and won't let us have it. So, they could make the best movie ever. I really think most fans would be like, no, I don't believe you. You've ruined 3 of these. And we were like 4 years away from getting Fantastic Four into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. More importantly, getting Doctor Doom into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And you're just going to piss all that away. So, screw you, Fox. And so, if that's what they want to go through, be my guest, Fox. I will personally leave the charge on this one. Because, as I keep saying, it needs to be phase Fantastic Four. Y'all keep fiddling around. We're going to burn it to the ground. I'm just telling you.
So, that's what Simon Kinberg's up to in his spare time. Coming up with ideas of how to save the Fantastic Four franchise.
I'm going to give him a pass. I think he's too busy to be involved with this one. So, Simon Kinberg, your name doesn't have to be associated with this one until it is, and then we'll burn that one down too.
Okay. So, Chad, there's a galaxy far, far away. It appears to be on fire. Burning as hot as a supernova.
Not the whole universe. Just this little part of the universe.
Little part of the universe that had crew shirts. Crew shirts that hit the internet with the logo. So, like, we were down to, like, the point in time where we were going to have a logo, and this thing was going to actually start being marketed.
I mean, technically, they could still do that.
But... And they will. So, Chad, this week, Lord and Miller, the patron saints of Hollywood, who took a movie about a bad Johnny Depp TV show from the 1980s and turned it into a multi-million dollar profitable movie.
Two of them.
Who took an idea about a movie involving Legos and made it a billion-dollar movie.
Mm-hmm.
The men who did a sequel to a bad movie, a good movie about a bad TV show from the 1980s, and made fun of sequels for an hour and a half to 2 hours.
There's a good 5 minutes at the end.
And made all kinds of money. And those people were hired by Lucasfilm to take the bad idea of a Han Solo origin story and make it into a billion-dollar hit. So what gives, Chad? What happened? Why are we no longer getting Lord and Miller's Han Solo movie? Who fired them, and when were they fired?
So, this is a long, convoluted story. Not so convoluted, but I think it's...
Oh, it's getting more convoluted because sides are, like, trying to position themselves on, like, no, don't blame us. Like, we wouldn't have known what was going on if it wasn't for this guy. If this guy wouldn't have come and told us, we wouldn't have known a thing, and we wouldn't have even questioned.
Okay, so, according to, I think, StarWarsNews.net, so, Lord Miller making this movie, and,
driving the little car down the road, down the Millennium Falcon road.
Well, we should start at the beginning. When they make this announcement, you know, Lawrence Kasdan, who's been involved with all the Star Wars movies.
Wrote Empire, wrote Jedi, wrote Force Awakens, so he's the three major Han Solo appearances in canon. He has written. He's written more of the character than George.
Mm-hmm. So he wrote this story for the Han Solo movie, I think, along with his son.
With his son, and he had intended for this to be the last Star Wars he ever wrote. Mm-hmm.
And so when they decided to do it and they were picking directors, he wanted it was on his choice, his decision to bring in Lord and Miller. Now, the movies you've named from Lord and Miller, you got the 221 Jump Street movies and the Lego movies. You know, they're like really
irreverent,
high fast comedy all throughout. So they knew what they were getting when they signed up for these guys. And Lawrence Kasdan really wanted them. So they're shooting this movie, and the movie's coming along. And apparently, somewhere during the shoot, the star of the movie, Alden...
Emmerich.
He went to the higher-ups and was like, I don't know if this is the direction the movie should be going in. I've heard the term screwball used to refer to the comedy in it.
I think the app comparison they made at one point, the line they drew was to Ace Ventura, Peck Detective.
Exactly right. And if this is all true, he's completely right. If that's the way the movie was turning, because it sounds like that's not the way the movie was originally supposed to be. And if the movie sucks, who's going to get dumped on the most? It's going to be him. So he's like, whoa. They're making Han Solo to Ace Ventura. Y'all might want to take a look at this stuff and take a step back. So they do, and apparently, also going on with this, Kasdan's been having his issues with them because Lord and Miller, you know, they're sticking to their style. And
they're improv directors.
Yep.
And they very much encourage experimentation on set.
And Kasdan is the complete opposite. He's like, follow the script, follow the page.
I put this down on paper for a reason.
Yep. It seems like the only ad-lib that he really didn't mind was the I know part in Empire, and can't really argue with that one. So,
and they were both drunk at the time, hungover
or high, you know. So this goes to Kathleen Kennedy. She looks over the dailies and stuff and like, okay, I see what he's talking about. So they go to Lord Miller and they're like, okay, we see what you're doing. This is not what we want y'all to do. So how about we do these things in the reshoots, and we're going to, you know, help guide y'all through it and whatnot. And they're like, no, we want to stick to our style. And she's like, okay, bye. And fired him. So
With 3 weeks left to go on principal photography.
Yeah, but this movie's been shooting since, what, February? So this has been an extremely long shoot. So they took this break for them to fire the Russos, Lauren Miller, who released a nice little pretty statement right around the time we were watching that trash Transformers movie that said, you know, in this case, it really is creative differences. And, you know,
listen, and took a nice walk down the street to the Warner Brothers lot.
But in the truest definition of the words, it is creative differences. They want to stick to their style. Lucasfilm was like, no. They're like, fine. And then they split ways. But it's just the fact that they split ways, as you said, with 3 weeks left to go. And they had to take, I think it's a 3 week break at this point. So they still have 3 weeks left to go. They took a break, basically, to get all this out of the way and to fill the
chair. First of all, amazing that we got through them going on hiatus with no one knowing that, like, the Titanic was being the deck chairs were being rearranged on the Titanic.
And look, between Lucasfilm and Marvel, Disney runs like a tight ship. If you hear something, they kind of want you to hear it. Otherwise, you don't hear nothing. So that is a miracle that, I mean, this is pretty major news that a staple Star Wars figure is getting his own movie, and the movie's going not so swimmingly. So now we're at the point where they have to find a director for Han Solo. And at the time, there was a short list, but there's no point going over the short list because we now have a director, and it will be good old Opie himself, Ron Howard. Ron Howard's going to take the director's chair for the
remainder. And put a couple of very nice tweets out about being a fan since the first day, saw the movie multiple times. The first day, he has a history with Lucasfilm, having already made a movie for them off of a story treatment from George Lucas many years ago. Has a broad filmography, very diverse filmmaker, and very experienced, and a friend, and somebody who's not going to rock that boat.
Yep. So when he got hired, the word that kept coming about was safe. He's the safe choice. Which,
they have gotten way more pushback on this than I ever thought they would. Like, the pushback is, the only reason we were interested in a Han Solo spinoff movie was because we had Lord Miller directing, and we know they can take bad concepts and make great movies. Now you fired him. Not only have you fired him, but you fired them over creative differences. You just went through a reshoot process on Rogue One where you shoehorned in a second director to sit in the room with Gareth and figure out how to make the movie more Star Wars-y. And before that, you fired a guy who worked on a script for a year on Force Awakens, and he barely got a story by credit at the end of the day. And you forced Cassidy and JJ to basically write for 60 days, start filming, and keep writing. So, the thought was that these spinoff movies, especially Rogue One and Han Solo, would be chances for you to break out of the norm, to give us something different, to give us a new interpretation of what Star Wars is. And the creative differences that you're talking about in this particular instance, well, in the two instances. In the Gareth instance with Rogue One, it was more about, this looks a little too much like a Saving Private Ryan. Mm-hmm. This looks a little too much like a war film. Doesn't feel enough Star Wars. There's no Vader in here. Because remember, the Vader scenes that everybody loves, they weren't in there.
Yeah.
They went in there and they re-added those. So Disney, Lucasfilm, and Kathleen Kennedy and the story group look and they see, this is what we need to add, and we're going to do the reshoots, and you can either be a part of it or you can go the way of Josh Trank. And Gareth was like, I need my name attached to this so I can make a lot of money and I can go take that capital and go and do whatever I want, because in 10 years, no one's going to remember that, like, these production issues were going on. So Gareth stayed on, and Gareth, they made a movie, and Gareth got a lot of credit for it, and Guillory got none, and we got Star Wars Rogue One, a Star Wars Story. In this particular case, however, it's almost as if Cassidy missed the interview for Lord Miller when they were going to get the job.
Yeah.
Because to me, the fundamental understanding of the character, because there's that damning quote right in the piece about He's sarcastic and he's selfish. Meaning Han Solo.
Yeah.
He's sarcastic and he's selfish. He's not comedic. He's sarcastic and he's selfish. So that, to me, was an indication of Kasdan or Kasdan's son or Kasdan's people going on set going, look, they don't understand the character. I've written this character more than anybody else in existence. Mm-hmm. I have a fundamental understanding of who and what Han Solo is, and a fundamental understanding of what this movie was supposed to be. And these guys want to turn him into Ace Ventura, which is going to be great and interesting and fun. And to be quite honest, Jim Vegeta made a very good point on Twitter about the possibility that maybe they were taking some shots at what Star Wars is in the movie. Because a lot of their movies, 21, 22 Jump Street, Lego, they're self-referential.
Yep.
It could have been possible that Lord and Miller were encouraging ad-libs that were taking shots at Star Wars. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. And maybe they didn't like that kind of thing either, for obvious reasons. So, to me, the crazy part about the Kasdan story and about Han Solo, the troubles that they've run into here are, like, this guy had one understanding, these directors had another understanding, and how did we not bridge that gap in a interview meeting?
Yep, that has been a lot of the pushback on all this. Is like, you know what you're getting into, why did you proceed? And why did you wait this late to press the escape button?
Yeah, I mean, Marvel and Ava didn't get halfway down the road. Edgar and Marvel, like, broke it off with 6 weeks to go before filming.
But it was all before, so people were like, I mean,
Peyton Reed had to be snatched up in a really quick hurry, but mm-hmm. I mean,
but I mean, people will scream about that one, but it was mostly because it's Ant-Man, and Marvel still hadn't, like, they were quite on their way to solidifying everything, but they weren't quite there yet. But I mean, your Lucasfilm, again, until we talk about it, I forget about the problems with Force Awakens and Rogue One, and even that was last year. So you have the capital where people are going to forgive you or forget about the things that have happened. So you could do these things early in the process, and people are like, yeah, okay. But 3 weeks left, of course you're going to get pushback. Everything's going to be bad for you.
The pushback that they're getting now is that you're risk adverse.
Yes.
That you're just like Marvel. Marvel doesn't go get Edgar Wright to do a movie in their shared universe because Edgar Wright is an auteur, and he's going to make an Edgar Wright movie. And you can't have an Edgar Wright movie. You can have tinges, like Guardians. Guardians has tinges of a James Gunn movie. It has his writing and his comedic timing and his brand of humor, but like, it's not like a solid, thus saith James Gunn, this is my movie, shot for shot, word for word, how I would envision it. And it's house style approach over there, where it's like, we're going to hire the Russos, who are from television. We're going to hire Alan Taylor, who's from television. We're going to hire Joe Johnson, who's an experienced hand in period piece filmmaking. We're going to go hire Favreau, who's a journeyman filmmaker with one major film that to his credit at that point, who has a passion and understanding of the character. We're going to go get guys who will work with us to make the movie that we want to make and not make their own movie. Because the way Marvel works is they give you the material, you look it over, and you pitch that material back to them. And they make a decision on whether or not your interpretation of their material is appropriate enough. That's the way Marvel works. And it's because they're part of a larger story, and every movie is basically an episode in this long TV series. Yada yada. And so that's why people got upset about Edgar, because it solidified the fact that Marvel was going down the TV route and not the best director for the best movie route. And with this, it's more, that's the hit on Lucasfilm. It's like, we thought that the standalone Star Wars stories, A, were supposed to explore new parts of the mythos, and B, that they were supposed to be offbeat, weird, and different in something that didn't look or feel like the episodic adventures. And now, by doing this, by hammering Garrett the way you did on Rogue One, and by firing Lord Miller, who, for again, for a lot of people, that was their only incentive to see the movie, and the only reason to have hope and faith that this could actually be good, now it's starting to seem like you just kind of want friends, and just kind of want shooters, and just kind of want to, okay, here's the movie you're going to make, we'll give you a nice paycheck at the end of it, and let's just all get through this.
So, I don't think anything's necessarily wrong with that. In Star Wars' case, well, Lucasfilm's case, with the episodic ones, you can do that for that. But the
what's crazy, though, is everything we're seeing and hearing out of Episode 8 feels like a Rian Johnston movie. And say what you want to about Force Awakens feeling like a Spielberg movie. That's who JJ is. That's who JJ is.
So with those, I think they're very much under a mandate, but they're letting the filmmakers do it as long as the filmmakers make it feel like Star Wars. It can be their spin on Star Wars, but it has to feel like Star Wars. I think what we were all hoping for the anthology series was that...
That's what they told us.
Like you said, yeah, like you said.
That's what they told us when they were announcing the films. Like, these are supposed to be different. These are supposed to be unique. These are not supposed to be like the episodic adventures.
But then look at the ones they chose to go with first. They go with Rogue One, which is literally the opening crawl from the first movie.
It's literally the answer to a question nobody had really ever asked. Yeah.
And the second one is this Han Solo movie. And I think as long as we have direct ties to the anthology ones, this is what you're going to get.
But I think what this is them being honest, and the way that this has been framed is essentially Cassidy had to make a choice between her best one of her friends of 30 years or two young hotshot directors, and she backed her old friend. The other part of it, framing of it, is that they don't want that they are still scared and skittish post prequels. That they still do not feel as a story group, as a creative team, that they are on firm enough footing two movies in and $3 billion in. They don't feel like they're on solid enough footing that you can put out a off the wall, offbeat movie, slap Star Wars on it, and people will show up. And so I think that they're still very hands-on and very careful about keeping fans happy, giving them exactly what they want, not pushing the envelope or rocking the boat.
I think that is probably the most accurate assessment of what's going on. Episode 8 comes out. It's received well. I think we'll finally get away from...
I don't see any way you can make the May release date. Because you still have 3 more weeks of filming to do, and 5 weeks of reshoots, and you have post-production. And yeah. It's not like moving it to December is going to make James Cameron cry.
Is Stupid Avatar coming out?
It's not till like 2020 or 2019 or something like that.
Yeah. Quick aside, so they're officially starting shooting on that in September. I didn't even bother putting on this because, again, until I see Blue Fairies on the screen again... This movie didn't happen, but I just thought I'd mention that. They're probably going to push it back to December. Fine. They're going to make a killing again. Fine. After all of this, they're going to get knocked for this movie one way or another. So, they want it safe. Let it be safe. But 8 needs to come out. 8 needs to crush it. And 8 needs to be a little bit different. So, the next anthology we get, it doesn't have to do with... it doesn't have to do with anything with the episodic ones, and you're laughing because you don't think there's going to be...
No, sir. I think before this news hit, everybody was pointing to that D23 panel and that Comic-Con panel saying, we're going to get a Han Solo trailer, we're going to get a Han Solo panel, and they're also probably going to show a trailer for Episode 8, and then we're probably going to get information about what the next anthology movie is going to be. And I would bet all of the money that I do not have that we were getting an announcement of Ewan McGregor in a Obi-Wan spinoff, which would please the fan base, because that's one spinoff the fan base has been asking for.
So
I don't think we're going to get an Ahsoka one, which is another one that fans would take too. I don't think we're gonna, you know, do the Bounty Hunters movie that that Trank was gonna tank. I think we were gonna get the announcement either at D23 or at Comic-Con about a Obi-Wan Kenobi movie scheduled for May of 2020.
So I agree. But they need to, so they need to get away from all these characters that's involved with the episodic ones.
These are the people's argument that, you know, doing a trilogy and not moving away from the Skywalker family, it's why a bunch of people fear what's going to happen in episode 8, because they were concerned that Rey's going to be somebody's kid, and so now you're going to continue to just make it the Skywalker saga. And fans, particularly the expanded universe, are like, look at all this content that you have that does not relate anything to the Skywalkers. And my argument is, you go ask 10 people on the street in Wichita, Kansas, and you ask them about Star Wars, they can only tell you about Luke Skywalker and the Skywalker family. They can't tell you about Ahsoka or what's the blue guy, the blue admiral guy from
Grand Admiral Thrawn.
Yeah, they can't tell you about Thrawn. They can't tell you about Mace Windu's secret history of being a Merlin. None of that.
Yeah, so, and I agree with that. I think the episode movie should focus on the Skywalkers. That's fine. But the anthology needs to get away. Like, Ahsoka's still not far enough away from the...
Unless you're gonna, like... That's why you start calling into question the whole being for standalone movies. Because if you're not, if you're gonna do standalone movies in the Star Wars universe, there, and you're gonna do them this way, answering questions no one's asked and just delving into more parts of the original mythos,
what's the point?
What's the point? All you're really doing is answering questions no one ever asked, and you're just grabbing money.
Now, with that said, if they announce the Obi-Wan movie, that's gonna appease everybody, and I think it's their way to split the bit. They get to do a fan favorite and keep their
it would, yeah. I would imagine that kind of a movie would be done between episodes 3 and 4 or 2 and 3. Because if you, the problem that you run into is if you're in 2 and 3, him and Anakin were basically just still running around the galaxy together.
I think it'll be between 3 and 4.
And at that point, you're talking about him being on Tatooine, and we've always wondered: did Obi-Wan just sit on Tatooine watching Luke grow up,
or did
Yoda make a transmission and be like, "We've got a mission for you"?
Yeah, I think you'll get it between 3 and 4.
Which would be a perfect place for Jimmy Smits's character to pop up again.
Yeah, you can put in all the favorites from the prequels and put them all in there, and it all makes sense, and everybody will be happy. But after Obi-Wan, they need to leave this. Go do a Knights movie. That's way far away. You still have lightsabers and Jedis and all this other stuff, and people get to learn stuff about the history of it, and do stuff like that for 3 or 4 movies. Then dip back into like an Ahsoka or something, and keep weaving in and out. And by the time you do Knights and then come back to Ahsoka, you could have gone and done some wild, crazy stuff and let people just have their visions, because at that point, you're about 6 movies in to this new iteration under the Disney regime. You should be on great creative grounds. Fans will probably love everything. Then you can go nuts and nobody's going to care. If it fails, they'll be like, well, they tried something different. I'm still going to pay my money for this next Star Wars movie.
And that's my problem with Kennedy and their fear. I understand the fear. George put out 3 movies that no one really liked, except for kids who were kids at the time. But the problem is, like, those movies still made a whole buntload of money. And they still get bought every time they're re-released on DVD or Blu-ray or digital.
Yeah.
So, like, Rogue One is a standalone Star Wars movie with, like, a Jedi in it for, like, half a minute. And it made $1 billion. That should give you the confidence enough to be like, let's take a gamble. If we slap Star Wars on anything, people will show.
So, I agree that should give them confidence. However, they'd already set the plans in motion to have a Han Solo one. And
again, it's Kasdan's story. Kasdan came up with it. This is his idea. To his credit, he didn't like the way they did Boba Fett in the prequel trilogy. He said it was dumb. I mean, like, I trust his vision. I trust his idea of what this movie was going to be. I just think that the writer and the producer and the director all need to be on the same page before someone is hired.
Yes, I think that is... I think everybody's in agreement there.
And at the very least, go talk to people who worked on the sets for them. Go talk to people who have worked and collaborated with them in the past. How is their working style? What is the atmosphere on set like for them? Are they improv guys or are they by the book guys? Like, find all that information. Talk to other people and find that information out. Do background research and figure out if these are really the people you want, as in Ava's term, get into bed with for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Because when it happens like this, and you're Star Wars, and you're 3 weeks out on a movie people are iffy on, it causes another PR crisis. And another PR crisis that will be averted, because you will drop a trailer at Comic-Con or D23 that'll be 2 minutes long for Episode 8. It'll be the last trailer we get before tickets go on sale in October, and everybody will forget all about the Han Solo situation.
You're right. And I think that's why they did it now, so they can
have a buffer. So everything can be set on fire, and then they can put it all out.
Yeah, you do it now. There's a buffer of like a month before D23. Things will start calming down by the time you get to D23. You don't have to have a panel because they're going to be shooting then. But then you're like, oh, here's Ewan McGregor come on stage, and everybody was like, we're getting the Obi-Wan movie. Everything else is forgotten, and then they're like, oh, wait. We forgot. We have this trailer for you, too. And then it's just like the Men in Black little flashy thing. It's all gone. It's all gone.
And such is the beauty of Star Wars.
Yeah. It's nice. Well, I mean, they're the king, so it's nice to be the king.
Nice to be the king until you screw up one time.
Yep. They keep trying to screw up, and then they keep, like, flashy things and like...
Did like the logo I saw, though, on the crew t-shirts.
I'm about to go look for that. I hadn't seen it.
It's just Solo... A Star Wars story, and the L in Solo is the blaster.
Okay. I like that.
That actually would be a pretty neat logo.
Yeah.
And that's the crazy part about it. We are less than a year away from this movie being released, technically, right now.
Yeah, right now. Until...
Until probably D23 and Comic-Con.
The first thing they're going to do is say, yeah, this movie's getting pushed back, but hey!
And if I was them, I would make a joke about it. Hey, you might have heard some news about what's been going on. Well, I've got some news for you. We're going to push that back to December. Sorry, anybody who's there.
Oh, wait. Ewan McGregor's on stage. Hey, everybody. And that's it. It's done. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. So that is our weird, wild, and wacky week in the world of genre movie news this week. Hopefully the internet will not be set ablaze again next week.
We can hope.
So we'll have slightly less to talk about. Spider-Man Homecoming is coming. And that'll be a great thing for everybody. So
I'm excited if I'm going to see it twice in one day.
Oh, this is quite interesting.
I might. Spider-Man and Superman, those are the ones I'll just sit there like the whole weekend for. So maybe.
We will see. Until next week, you can follow, if you like this podcast, you can keep up with us on Twitter. I am at VCW Tiger Fan.
And at The Mets Theory.
Thank you very much, and have a pleasant evening.